I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. In pursuit of peace, new developments in the push for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Protecting the vulnerable. A pro-life group joins with lawmakers to send an important message. We're on Capitol Hill. Global gathering. President Joe Biden heads to Italy for a meeting of world leaders. We have a preview. And a good time. Pope Francis has some advice for priests on the perfect length of a homily. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden travels to the G7 summit in Italy to tackle the world's major challenges, the war in Ukraine and the Middle East among them, with the U.S. making a big announcement today. This trip will also give the president a chance to meet with Pope Francis. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
We're learning tonight that at the upcoming summit overseas, the U.S. and Ukraine will sign a bilateral security agreement. It does not mean U.S. troops will be on the ground. However, it does send an unambiguous signal to Russia.
President Joe Biden heads to Italy for the G7. On Thursday, he'll meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to sign that new agreement. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan explains its purpose.
We want to demonstrate that the U.S. supports the people of Ukraine, that we stand with them, and that we'll continue to help address their security needs, not just tomorrow, but out into the future.
As Ukrainian soldiers fight back against Russia's invasion, Sullivan said the agreement would not commit U.S. troops directly to Ukraine's defense.
Any lasting peace in Ukraine has to be underwritten by Ukraine's own ability to defend itself and deter future aggression.
President Biden also navigating the war in the Middle East. Today, hundreds of rockets fired from Lebanon toward northern Israel. Just hours earlier, Israeli airstrikes killed a Hezbollah commander. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken today meeting with the Prime Minister of Qatar, which is involved with the ceasefire negotiations.
But in the days ahead, we are going to continue to push on an urgent basis with our partners, with Qatar, with Egypt, to try to close this deal.
Blinken emphasized Hamas cannot and will not be allowed to decide the future for the region and its people. In the meantime, he warned of more pain.
More people will suffer. More Palestinians will suffer. More Israelis will suffer.
Now back to the G7 summit, of which Pope Francis will be attending. The White House has confirmed President Biden will have an audience with the Pope on Friday. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And coming up later in this newscast, a preview of the president's meeting with Pope Francis from Dr. Ken Craycraft, professor of moral theology. And now for more on the situation in the Middle East, let's bring in Gaith Al-Omari, an expert in Arab and Israeli relations at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Gaith, good to be with you again. As we heard from White House correspondent Owen Jensen, Secretary Blinken had a meeting in Qatar to discuss a ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. What do you think the likelihood is of a truce?
I think it is quite minimal, to be honest. I mean, and that's for two reasons. One, there is a square that has to be circled, and it's really hard. On the one hand, Israel says the war will only end if Hamas is destroyed. On the other hand, Hamas says we'll only sign a hostage deal if there are guarantees there'll be a permanent ceasefire that guarantees their survival. So neither of them has much of an incentive. And I would add to that, that at least in the case of Hamas, they feel that Israel is getting more isolated, that public opinion is turning on Hamas. And as we saw from a report that was published in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, the Hamas leader in Gaza believes that the more suffering that the Palestinians go through, the more that Israel is isolated. On the other hand, Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu, has his own domestic politics, and now he's much more dependent on the very extreme components of his government. So the politics is just not right for it.
Yeah, Gaithan, as you know, Hamas offered a counterproposal in ceasefire talks. However, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that some of the changes are unacceptable. Can you talk to us more about that and the big sticking points for both sides?
Right. I have to start with the caveat that I have not seen the report or the response. But from the reports that I have seen, basically, Hamas has changed its mind about certain things that it accepted. it hardened its position. So right now, for example, it's demanding that there's going to be an end of the war, a permanent end of the war, by the end of phase one of the proposal. I mean, maybe take a step back. President Biden proposed three phases for this process. Hamas wants to say we want a permanent ceasefire by the end of that. That was not Hamas's position, you know, a few weeks ago when it made its initial proposal. So they're walking back some of their positions. They're calling for a complete Israeli exit from Gaza. Again, these are new demands, or rather, these are changes of Hamas's previously accepted position. That's why Secretary Blinken, and I think someone in the White House, maybe it was National Security Advisor Sullivan, said that this is basically not showing negotiation in good faith.
Yeah, I quickly want to get to this. Benny Gantz, a senior member of Israel's war cabinet, he resigned over the weekend. What do you think this signals, and will his departure have a big impact in this war and a potential peace deal?
It signals that Israel is also a very divided society in terms of how to achieve the objectives. Part of the Israeli society believes that only military force will work, and part, and Gantz is part of that camp, believes that diplomacy and negotiation and a deal with Hamas is necessary. In the short term, Gantz's departure, and Gantz was one of the more centrist members of the Israeli war cabinet, in the short term, it will give more power to some of the more extreme voices, like finance minister and the national security minister. But in the longer term, I think it will deepen the need in Israel to reach an election. That's a divided society. The government does not represent the whole society. And I think there's a growing momentum towards an election sometime sooner there.
And before I let you go quickly, today, the terror group Hezbollah launched hundreds of rockets into northern Israel. This after an Israeli airstrike that killed the Hezbollah commander. How does this conflict, Gaith, play into the situation in Gaza or complicate it? And also going back to that potential peace deal?
Look, I mean, we've seen an escalation. The attacks between Hezbollah and Israel are increasing in terms of intensity, in terms of scope, etc. And it's one of these ironic situations where neither side actually wants a war, because both sides stand to lose a lot in a war, yet neither side is willing to step down. And there's a big concern that a miscalculation, a mistake, could actually lead to an all-out war that would be much more devastating than the war in Gaza, or at least equally devastating. Now, Hezbollah says that they will stop attacks in Israel if there is a truce in Gaza. And there's a linkage between the two. And I think that's why the president, and I believe the secretary as well, said that having a truce in Gaza is key to basically de-escalation in the whole region, including the Lebanese front.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Gaith, always good to be with you. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
Well, a group of Russian Navy ships have arrived in Cuba, just 90 miles from Florida. The U.S. deployed ships and planes to monitor the Russian vessels in the Atlantic and Caribbean. The ships are on a five-day visit in a show of strengthening ties between the Cold War allies. Cuba says visits such as these are standard practice and said the Russian stopover should not represent a threat. By a slim margin, the House passed a contempt resolution against Attorney General Merrick Garland. It sets up a legal battle between Congress and the Justice Department leading into the November election. The contempt resolution passed along party lines. Oversight Committee Chair James Comer and Judiciary Head Jim Jordan want the Justice Department to release audio recordings of Special Counsel Robert Hur's interview with President Biden about his family's business dealings with foreign nationals. The DOJ has released the transcripts from those depositions. If the U.S. Attorney's Office refused to do anything, the case will end up in federal court. A final decision will not happen until after the election. Well, as Democrats continue to promote a pro-abortion agenda, the pro-life movement is calling on Republican lawmakers to protect human life. Several congressmen gathered outside of the Capitol side by side with pro-life activists to make their voices heard. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story.
Good evening to you. There was a lot of enthusiasm and optimism in protecting the lives of the unborn at this press conference, which was hosted by the pro-life organization Live Action. Speakers sent a clear message to Congress that the fight to protect the unborn is alive and well in this post-Roe era.
The fight for life is far from over. Challenges persist, including the distribution of dangerous abortion drugs. Our fight continues, and we must harness the momentum from Dobbs to secure further victories.
President Biden has said multiple times it is his belief that life begins at conception. It's mine also. I have a bill that defines human life at conception. The problem is Mr. Biden and a lot of his allies lack the courage politically of their convictions to actually to protect and defend the human life.
Naomi Hahn is a 10th grader who wants to become a nurse. She and others from Students for Life hope laws remain in place to protect their religious convictions against abortions.
I will never perform an abortion. I will never assist to perform an abortion, even if it means that if I'm working at a hospital, I'm going to get my license revoked, so be it.
A former abortionist says he used to think he was helping women, but soon learned.
Abortion is a bloody, violent, brutal, unmerciful surgery or process that is emotionally filled with trauma, regret, hatred, shame, guilt, and malice.
When abortion isn't pushed on women, women reconsider all their options. And when given the ability to view a sonogram and hear the real resources and support available to them, almost every single one of them chooses life.
Meanwhile, Democrats continue to keep the abortion issue at the forefront.
The chaos, the fear, the heartbreak caused by extreme Republican abortion bans has only grown with each passing day. And we would like to say to any Republicans who are still in denial, this issue is not going away.
Bottom line, the 2024 election is just a few months away, 5 months to be exact. Lawmakers hope that the pro-life community will make their voices heard at the ballot box. Outside the U.S. Capitol, Eric Rosales, CWTN News Nightly.
Massachusetts has launched an effort to target pregnancy centers, almost all of which are pro-life. The state says its, quote, education campaign will highlight the dangers and harm of crisis pregnancy centers. Pro-lifers say the centers provide millions of dollars to women facing planned and unplanned pregnancies, adding the campaign in Massachusetts is politically motivated. The Federal Reserve says that it is keeping its benchmark lending rates at their current levels, adding that there has been, quote, modest progress in bringing down inflation. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell kept the rate the same for the seventh consecutive time. He also signaled there will be fewer rate cuts this year than expected. That means borrowing costs on everything from car loans to mortgages will remain elevated. The Federal Reserve also says they expect inflation to be more stubborn this year than they originally thought back in the spring. Well, back in business. The Port of Baltimore has fully reopened less than 100 days after the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. But as the Transportation Secretary points out, this is just the beginning of a long and expensive road to recovery.
We released $60 million to help get that process going. We're side by side with Maryland DOT in their work. They're already engaging in the procurement, the design. They estimate it'll take about $1.7 to $1.9 billion to get that new bridge in place. But when it is there, it'll be not just a new part of the Baltimore skyline, but an important link for supply chains and for commuters.
And it's important indeed. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including concern in the classroom. Why Cardinal Timothy Dolan is sounding the alarm over proposed legislation in New York, and a preview of the expected meeting this week between President Biden and Pope Francis. Hundreds of young adult women gathered in the nation's capital as part of a Catholic Women's Leadership Conference. The event featured talks, networking opportunities, and spiritual direction focused on the gift of each individual. The event, organized by the Given Institute, founded by religious sisters, awarded its first ever Fiat Prize for upholding the values of the church and sharing the life of Christ with others. This year's winner was Mary Ann Glendon, a renowned Harvard legal scholar and former ambassador to the Holy See. In her remarks, she recalled advice from Pope Benedict on how to change the world.
I love the answer that Pope Benedict gave to a 16-year-old boy who said, "Oh, Holy Father, how can one little person transform the culture, change the culture?" And Pope Benedict said, "You start with yourself."
Great advice. And Cardinal Timothy Dolan accuses lawmakers in New York of bullying religious schools. He specifically points to a recent proposal that seeks to prohibit so-called discrimination based on a person's gender identity or expression. Writing in Compact Magazine, the head of the Archdiocese of New York says in part, quote, "The very characteristics that set us apart and help us produce well-rounded, loving, and productive young women and men must be stamped out in favor of a gender ideology that would force us to deny the inherent differences between boys and girls." Cardinal Dolan also says the measure would undermine the core philosophy for which New York parents choose the church's schools in the first place. The so-called anti-discrimination measure failed to gain enough support in this legislative session, but Cardinal Dolan believes that it will return to the agenda soon. And as we mentioned earlier, President Joe Biden arrived in Italy this afternoon, the site of this year's G7 summit. While at the global gathering, President Biden is expected to meet with Pope Francis. The Holy Father is attending the meetings to discuss approaches to the rise of artificial intelligence. The two have met several times before, both and during Biden's time in the White House. Here with a preview of President Joe Biden's meeting with Pope Francis is Dr. Ken Craycraft, the James J. Gardner Family Chair of Moral Theology at Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Cincinnati, Ohio. He is also the author of the new book, Citizens Yet Strangers, Living Authentically Catholic in a Divided America. Dr. Craycraft, great to be with you today. We appreciate it. A lot to discuss, but first, I want to talk about the significance of the Holy Father attending the G7 summit. How important is that, and what do you expect him to address?
Well, I think it's very important because it shows that the Holy Father is not just the head of all the Catholics in the world, but he's also the head of state of the Vatican. And of course, since the G7 is being held in Italy on the southeast coast, it is appropriate that the Pope is there, both in his capacity as a spiritual leader to the world, not just Catholics, but to the world, but also, of course, in his role as a political leader.
Yeah, and as mentioned before, he's also meeting with President Joe Biden, the second Catholic president in U.S. history. What do you anticipate the two will discuss?
I think that they will stay away from some of the moral issues that animate discussions in the U.S. about the Catholic Church and public life. My guess is that they'll be concentrating mostly on immigration, the difference between economic migration and political or religious migration or refugee issues, things like asylum and so forth, borders and such. And also, of course, I think they'll be talking a great deal about war and peace, the problems of war in the Middle East and Israel, and perhaps the developing broader conflicts in the Middle East. And of course, the war in Ukraine will be high on the agenda. So I think that the president will use this opportunity to discuss those things with Pope Francis. And hopefully Pope Francis is going to give the president some strong moral guidance on what the posture should be in the United States and indeed around the world to these very vexing problems.
Yeah, and according to a recent study from the Pew Research Center, only about 35% of American Catholics view President Biden as favorable. What do you think is behind those numbers? And do you think this meeting with Pope Francis will help to maybe move the needle when it comes to his favorability rating?
Yeah, I'll answer the second question first. I don't think it will move the needle very much. I think that maybe President Biden and his campaign staff thinks that it will, because I don't think there's any doubt that the campaign is going to be involved in this as well, not just the administration and the White House, that they see this as a photo opportunity for the campaign. As to your first question, I think the issue is, for many Catholics, is that they just don't see President Biden reflecting the moral life of the Catholic Church in the way that most Catholics in America understand it.
And before I let you go, Dr. Craycraft, on a different note, back here in the United States, the bishops are meeting in Kentucky. What are the priorities for that meeting for the USCCB?
Well, once again, I think the USCCB is going to say that abortion is the preeminent moral issue in America today, because the issue in itself is very important, but also because it's a bellwether for other issues. But I also think the bishops are going to have high on their agenda immigration again, because the president has just issued an executive order that changes the administration policy on immigration. Some bishops have responded to that in a very negative way. And so I think the bishops, when they meet in Kentucky, are also going to be discussing the problems of immigration and how to deal with that in a very measured and practical way, rather than in an extreme way, which the two political parties in the U.S. seem to have reduced immigration to. So I think that the bishops are going to concentrate on that. But the bishops, anytime they meet, they're always going to have abortion on their mind, because abortion is a bellwether issue. It's not just the issue itself, but it's how the issue of abortion is kind of a proxy for all kinds of other moral issues that are also very important to us Catholics in the U.S.
Well, Dr. Craycraft, thank you so much. We really appreciate your insights. God bless.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, time for a talk. Pope Francis has a message for priests about the best homilies, plus the Sound of Music at the Vatican. We'll explain. Church narrowly rejected a proposal to ban churches with women pastors. The proposal gained more than 60% support from delegates at the annual meeting in Indianapolis. It needed a two-thirds supermajority. The official doctrine of the country's largest Protestant denomination states that only men can be pastors. The Southern Baptists also voted to oppose in vitro fertilization. Well, Pope Francis has some advice for priests. Keep your homilies short.
La morte e la resurrezione di Cristo è il faro che illumina tutta la Bibbia.
At his weekly talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father says the perfect length of a sermon is around 8 minutes, or else the faithful might start to fall asleep there. He also says the primary goal of a homily is to bring the Word of God from a book into life. Well, finally tonight, the sound of bagpipes and drums filled the air at the Vatican, thanks to a regiment of the British Army that attended the general audience to commemorate a historical event. Today is the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Rome. Ah, the Royal Irish Regiment met with the Holy Father just as they had done back in 1944. Today, the brigade played several traditional songs while parading through St. Peter's Square. The British ambassador to the Holy See says the showing was historically accurate.
And the reason that we had this particular event today was because at that time, Pope Pius XII said, after the liberation had happened, "I want to say thank you to the Irish regiment who'd been the first ones to come into Rome." And so he invited them to come back from the front for the day, and he gave them an audience, and they were able to play to Pius XII on the 12th of June 1944. Today is the 12th of June. 2024, 80 years later.
Wow, incredible. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.